sabrosura pa ti que que.
Hello everyone, this is Pam de Café con Pam, the bilingual podcast that features Latine and people of the global majority who break barriers, change lives, and make this world a better place. Welcome to episode 292 of Café con Pam. Today, we have a conversation with Marta Tellado. Marta is the CEO of Consumer Reports, the independent nonprofit organization fighting side by side with consumers for truth, transparency, and fairness in the marketplace. And Marta is working to create a more inclusive consumer movement that fights for all of us. For Marta, Consumer Reports' mission is a deeply personal one. Her parents fled Cuba under Castro's regime when Marta and her three brothers were small children. Unwilling to abandon their values, privacy, and freedom, they came to the U.S. to live in a free and open society. Their sacrifices and mission to raise their children in a country promising both democratic freedoms and economic equity had a profound and lasting impact on Marta. Listeners, this conversation with Marta was really eye-opening, was extremely insightful because the work that Marta does isn't just for some people. I think Consumer Reports and the work that they do, it affects every single person that has a wallet, which is a lot of us, whether we have and consume bigger products or smaller products. Productivity, collaboration, and accountability. As a recovering procrastinator, I was desperate to find a solution. I wanted to be one of those people who gets things done. The truth is, I get things done. I just get them done in a different way. So I created Power Sisters. This is the only program that pairs you up with your own Power Sister so you can finish that project, apply for that job, or have some company as you tackle your never-ending to-do list. You feel me? Inside Power Sisters, we celebrate culture, neurodiverse brains, first-generation humans who bleed, and naps. Power Sisters is now open for enrollment, and if you have been thinking about working together, this is your sign, and I cannot wait to see you inside. Join us at powersisters.club. Again, powersisters.club. See you inside. And frankly, her book, which is, we'll talk about that, and her overall work, because we explore her whole story, was really powerful. And so I really hope that you enjoy this interview and this conversation with Marta Tellado. Marta, welcome to Café con Pam. It's been so exciting to have you.
It's thrilling to be here. It's great to meet you, Pam.
Yes, likewise. So the question that I always start with is, what is your heritage?
Oh, my heritage. Well, I was born in Havana, Cuba, and my mother's was also born in Havana, Cuba, as was my father. And her heritage is from the island. And my father's parents immigrated to Cuba when they were teenagers looking for work. That's pretty much it. So it's something I'm very proud of.
When did they come to the U.S.? You were little.
Well, we left in 1961. I was 2 years old.
Do you remember?
I don't remember. I don't remember any of it. I have three older brothers. We are all under the age of six. I mean, that's remarkable, right? To pack up young parents who are just getting started and pack up and leave and go to a country where they have to start all over again.
For sure. Where did you end up?
We ended up in Newark, New Jersey. So I had a very urban, we had a four-story walk-up and my grandparents lived there with us. The kids slept in bunk beds in the dining room. And that was, to me, like a marvelous place. I thought everybody slept in the dining room.
Right.
You know, it was, to me, it was an adventure.
Yeah, it's the typical Latino first generation immigrant household where like everyone is in there. And then you go, like this happened to me where I would go to friends' houses and I'm like, oh, only three people live in this house? What?
Yes. And then, you know, really your grandparents are there because they're helping. Your parents have to go work all hours of the day, multiple jobs. And that's the way you get childcare. That's the only way you can make it work.
That multi-generational.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It makes it that much harder for generations now because that's not something that's easily put together.
For sure. I was reading an article about multi-generational households and how, according to the article, the pandemic brought that multi-generational household, quote, culture to the US. And when I was reading it, I'm like, this is a lie, because brown people have had multi-generational households since the history of time. The point was that of the article that parents, grandparents, and children had to move back into the same house because of the pandemic. And I'm like, they learned it from Latinos, from immigrants.
Well, we definitely have been doing it. And let me say, that generation, first gen is one thing, but in our culture, and this particularly touches the women who are listening, even if you're first gen, you grow up with an expectation that you will be the person to take care of your parents. And so you're conflicted in this, you know, bicultural state. Where you are feeling like, wait a minute, I'm independent, I have a job, I'm a professional, how do I do that? And also feel like I'm living up to what it means to be a good daughter in Latino culture. That's something I get from a lot of young women that I mentor. It's like, how did you do that? How do you do that? And it's a work in progress.
You just do it, right?
Yes, you just do it and you do the best you can and you make it work.
Who came first, your grandparents or your parents?
Well, my grandparents came first, but they came because they were coming to visit my uncle who left first. And he left first and they were just here visiting him.
So they had a plan to go back?
Oh, yeah, they did. Yes. So, you know, they had a tourist suitcase and ended up staying. Never went back.
Wow. I mean, I feel like that happens often, especially when there's, you know, you think back in your country and you're like, do I really want to go back?
Well, for us, you know, there was a revolution and we had high hopes for it. And then when my parents saw that, you know, freedom of expression and the ability to participate and make choices for your family was not coming back, they realized we have to do something pretty dramatic. And that was my first lesson in courage, that they made that decision with four young kids. And if you think about it, the decision is really based on an idea that there's this place called America that has a democracy and that we can start over again. And that's the chance they took.
Have you had conversations with them about it?
Oh, you grow up talking about it all the time. It's like, this is a tremendous opportunity. You have to make something of it, get an education. You know, we're going to work hard so that you can do that. So it's always sort of in the water. You grew up with a tremendous amount of reverence, but responsibility, because you realize, you know, in a country as big and as strong as ours, you sometimes take this for granted. And when you come from a small island where you don't have a tremendous history of democracy, and then you lose what you have, you think, wait a minute, I have to be a part of this, that democracy means we have to engage in society.
And I could see how your upbringing informs your current work now. And your passion for all of it.
Without question. I am so shaped by how I got here, the reasons that I got here, the dinner table conversations of what's happening in the world. That shaped who I was, and it gave me a tremendous sense that I want to be a part of strengthening those things that we value. And also, you know, we've talked a lot about this very familiar story of the promise of America, and we came at a time where my parents could take advantage of that. And one of the things I know I carry with me is I want to do whatever I can to make sure that that promise is extended to others that are coming now. And so as I began to look at the marketplace and be engaged in work, philanthropic work, government work, you see that there are forces in the marketplace that pull back on some of that promise and opportunity. And so much of what I talk about in the book as well is about that. In a way, it's a larger meditation on democracy, that it can only thrive if you also have a marketplace that's fair and open and full of opportunity and promise for everyone.
So you grew up in New Jersey and you had this kind of like, maybe said, maybe unsaid responsibility of like, get an education. You have the opportunity. We are here. How did you decide what to study?
You know, I didn't overthink it, Pam. It's funny. There are four kids, but I'm the only one who chose to study government and politics, and everybody else chose other things. But for me, it's like I was so curious about what my parents were talking about all the time. You'd go to adult parties and it's like, did you read about this? Oh, look what's happening in this country. You know, oh, you know, the election is next week. We have to go vote. And so I was fascinated by that. And I thought, I want to learn more about that. I want to learn more about how one creates opportunity, how one extends agency and power to people in communities. So I immediately knew I wanted to study political science, and I thought I was going to be a college professor, which is why I went and got a PhD in political science, because I loved college. I thought I would love to teach. I would love to inspire young people about ideas, because they're so powerful. And that's not what happened. I didn't do that.
Was your track like fully without stop? So you went to college and then undergrad, grad?
No. You put your finger on it. I took a break after college and went to Washington, D.C. Wow. An internship changed my life. I signed up for an internship to work in a nonprofit, a public interest group, and it was no accident. It was a consumer rights organization, a public citizen.
No way.
Way. I came full circle. And that was how I cut my teeth. I was like, just out of college. I was a senior. I did my last semester there. And once I saw what it was like, I didn't want to leave. So I stuck around and I worked in Washington for 3 years. And then I decided I wanted to go to graduate school. But those 3 years had such an impact on me that when I finally got to that remarkable place, in graduate school, I thought, I want to be on the front lines. I love the ideas and I'm inspired by the ideas, but I also love putting them to action.
That's when the shift happened.
Yes. And so it was, I had to braid my passion for ideas with my passion for action.
And so you go into grad school and you move into your PhD and you still wanted to be a professor.
Well, I started doubting it a little bit when I got there. I was the only Latina in that class, and it was a tough transition initially. I met a professor who was teaching African-American politics at the time, and he became my mentor. And really, it makes such a difference when you have professors who understand you. And he also saw the passion that I had to get back to work on the front lines, and he valued that. Nothing happens by yourself. You are surrounded by people who give you that hand up and nurture you. And he was one of those. But that's, I realized I want to finish this. I'm a finisher, right? And as a Latina woman, Pam, you got to know every credential you have.
It matters.
Matters a great deal. I mean, we live in a society where yes, people are judging. And if you're a woman, if you're a minority, if you're Latina, so I thought, no, this is an opportunity. I'm going to finish this. But then I have to make a decision about where I really want to make a difference. And that was in either, public service of some kind. That's kind of the thread. It was public service. It was nonprofits, also philanthropy, and now a social enterprise, an organization that is a business, but we pour all of our earned revenue into making a difference.
For sure. How was it for you to be the only Latina in your program?
Not easy. But it helps you navigate a world in which you're going to find yourself in that situation a lot, at least my generation. I love now that I run into other Latina women who are coming up, and I love this notion that I could be their mentors. I didn't have a Latina mentor. I didn't have a Sotomayor to look up to. These are sort of a wonderful thing to be watching and seeing and experiencing. So you get used to that, unfortunately. But I have been in many situations throughout my life where you are that only one.
For sure. And I think hearing your story and seeing how now it's cool to be Latino, like Bad Bunny says, everyone wants to be Latino, pero les falta sazón. How is it for you to see now how all this pride and all of these products that people have created around Latino culture when you were in school, and maybe, I don't know if there was an assimilation that you had to do because there wasn't other people like you. And so how do you see that now, looking at how people are consuming their culture in such ways?
That's a great question. So a couple of things. I think initially when one does, you can remember moments in your childhood, especially as a teenager, where you so want to be the other, but you get to a point in your life where you realize, oh my God, I have all these skills because I actually can navigate multiple worlds. I actually can be that bridge. And that is very empowering. And so finding that and embracing it and being proud of it is a wonderful kind of maturation point in my life that I really appreciate. And on the marketplace, I can remember when you couldn't even get like a bag of taco chips at the store. I mean, it was not cool. It was like potato chips. That was it. And now it's like, hey, it's Daddy Yankee. It's Despacito, the number one song in the world. That's amazing. And so what I want us to be embracing is the power that that represents in the marketplace, that we have the power. I don't want us to just be seen as an opportunity for revenue. I want us to bend the marketplace so that it works for us. And now that we are here and our presence is being felt and it is being recognized as a source of potential revenue, let's use it. Let's use it in a really smart way.
I mean, I have so many questions. Tell me, how did you arrive to Consumer Reports?
Well, you know, I was at the Ford Foundation. It's a global philanthropy. At the time, it was the biggest philanthropy. Now we have the Gates Foundation and many others. It's an amazing time in philanthropy. And I went to it after I spent a number of years in Washington in government, which I really loved. I mean, that was such a passion for me to be on the front lines and to recognize how a piece of legislation can change millions of lives in one stroke. It's incredible. And then also really giving back in every way. But I also was curious about the international scope, and we had offices at Ford Foundation all over the world. It was also a big opportunity for me to be more engaged in Latin America. We had multiple offices in Latin America. We had offices in Santiago, Chile, Mexico City. So that was a great opportunity for me to grow in those ways. And I spent 10 years there. It was remarkable going into the hills of Peru and looking at women starting microfinance circles to create livelihoods. It was remarkable going to South Africa and visiting a number of the places that Nelson Mandela did his work. So all very moving. And when I got to the Ford Foundation, I really started to think, you know, I want to try running something. I want to try looking at a large, complex nonprofit that needs leadership, that is creating something, that is at a point of transition. You know, one of the things I learned about myself is I'm not a driver, I'm a builder. You know, I like to build the roads, architect the way it's going to look. And then, you know, when CR called me and said, we're at a point where we think the organization can grow its power. And we're also at a point where the marketplace is shifting dramatically. Can you come and be that change maker? And that's the word that got me, is change maker. That to me is just a wonderful opportunity to come and be a force of change somewhere and really build the team to help you do it. And that's how I got there. And you know, the earlier part of the conversation, the irony, of course, is that my very first job as an intern was working on consumer issues.
For sure. That's why I was like, wait, that's an interesting full circle.
Yeah, something mystical there. I don't know. I haven't figured it out, but it was really quite something.
And that's why I love exploring people's stories, because there's always this thread that continues to be built. And sometimes we don't kind of like see it weave together. But then when we're able to go back and they're like, oh, you know what? We started there and now here we are. It's really cool to see that your first internship was in consumer products and now doing what you do. And so when you were in at the Ford Foundation, how many people did you lead?
I led global communications, and I think we had something like 20, 25 people. So that was a big leap, right? To go from 25 people to an organization where you're responsible for over 500.
How was that jump for you?
Exhilarating. I also just, you know what you don't know. It's important to go into a job knowing what you don't know and being really open and listening to people. My first year there, you know, as a CEO, as a first-time CEO, you have to remember people look at you and they think she has all the answers. She's got all the answers in her back pocket. And I spent a lot of time telling people I don't have them, but I need to learn from you. I need to hear from you. I need to understand what you're struggling with, what's your challenge, what are our capabilities, what do we need? You know, at the time, you know, the digital marketplace was exploding. And, you know, do we have those capabilities? Do we need to bring in that next generation of digital natives to understand what's happening? So you have to keep your ear to the ground. And really, you do not have all the answers. That is not your job.
Let's go into a coffee break, and then we'll come back to talk about you moving into an organization that's been around since, what, the 60s?
Oh, more than that, since 1936.
1936.
Yes, yes. We've been around a long time.
Yeah. All right, let's take a coffee break and let's come back.
sabrosura pa ti que que.
Marta, do you drink coffee?
I do drink coffee. I love coffee. It's my daily ritual.
Tell me about your daily ritual. How do you drink your coffee?
I have an espresso machine, and I do a double shot of espresso and steam milk. That's it. You are what you are, and I don't deny it. That is my no sugar, though. That's very un-Cuban.
That's very un-Cuban, for sure. Yeah.
This is the next gen speaking here. No, that's enough with the sugar. When I think of how much sugar my grandmother put in her coffee, it troubles me.
I mean, it's more like syrup.
Exactly.
So you do double espresso with some steamed milk. So like a good old cafecito.
Yeah. On weekends, sometimes we go up to the mountains and to relax, to get some fresh air out of the city. I don't have an espresso machine there, but I have a French press and I love that. It's a slightly different, you know, but it's strong. It's nice.
Yeah. There's an art for French pressing. I'm not a fan of French press because you have to get it just right.
You do. And it has to do with the grounds also, how fine they are. So you have to do your own grounds.
Yes. Like you have to have the perfect amount and the water needs to be at the right temperature. Yeah, French press is an art. So anytime I meet French press drinkers, I'm like, you're meticulous. I see that.
Yes, it's all about the details.
Yes, for sure. So are you drinking anything today or you've already had your coffee?
Oh, I already had my coffee.
You just have your one in the morning?
I had one in the morning. What I have found is that if I do an afternoon one, I have a little bit of trouble sleeping.
For sure.
After 12:30, I really can't do any more coffee.
Mine is one. So same. I have all my coffee in the morning and then tea afterwards. Do you have any favorite coffee shop that you visit that you want to give a shout out to?
I like making my own. And when I am upstate, I like giving my business to a local coffee. They roast their own beans from Latin America there in the Catskills. And so I always get their coffee. It's a nice organization.
I love going to roasters because you smell it. It's like, oh.
Yes.
So good. On my end, I am drinking Wonderground coffee. And this is not sponsored or an ad, but it's a local coffee shop in Washington, in Seattle. And they do mushroom coffee. So I'm a mushroom coffee drinker.
Wow.
Adaptogenics. Yeah. With cordyceps and lion's mane to help my brain. And I found Wonderground and they are a local coffee shop that makes coffee with mushrooms. And so I've been drinking them and they're like so good. One of the best mushroom coffees I've had.
I had not even heard of that. So I've learned something today with you, Pam. Mushroom coffee. Who knew? I had no idea.
So good. It helps you like get focused. And I don't need that much coffee because the mushrooms kind of like help my brain get that clarity that we seek for the coffee. I mean, I also do it for like the ritual of like, oh, my morning coffee. But yeah, Wonderground in Seattle.
I love Seattle. It's a great city.
It's a very coffee type city.
Oh, I love it. Seattle is a really cool place. The last time I was there, I went rollerblading around this beautiful lake.
How fun.
Yes, totally.
I don't know if I can take the rain of Seattle, but yes, to go visit is a great place.
And good chocolate too, by the way.
Yes, for sure. Okay, let's get back to the show. Hola, Vanis. By the way, if you are enjoying this conversation and you want to keep talking about it, if you have some comments and maybe some questions that you have, follow me on social media and let's keep that conversation going. This is your reminder to screenshot and tag me at Café con Pan Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. And let's keep talking about it. Tell me what's resonating. Tell me what isn't. Tell me what do you wish I asked the guest. This is your chance. And if you're on TikTok, I'm at Café con Pan Pod as well. Let's stay connected. Sabrosura pa ti que que. All right, Martha. So we were talking about leadership and your iconic organization that you're a part of. How was it for you to join an organization that's been around for so, so many years? Because one thing that I have seen, especially with organizations that have existed for a while, is the quote, we've been doing this the whole time, or this is how it's been done. And so at times, it could be challenging to innovate. So how was it for you to join and to, especially you mentioned the digital boom that we had in consumerism. And so how did you approach this from a leadership standpoint?
I had some experience because Ford Foundation was also founded in 1936. How interesting, right? That point did not get lost on me. I got to the organization and they also were steeped in a lot of tradition and the world was changing. Philanthropy was changing. We had to modernize some of the things we were doing. We had to think about how data was helping us be a learning organization. How do you learn? How do you capture, you know, especially when you're about social change and, you know, how do you build on what your knowledge base is? So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed working with an organization that had a tremendous reputation and history. Standing on the shoulders of that history and looking out at the horizon and saying, what is the next great moment that we need to be a part of, that we need to help shape? So that inspired me. And when Consumer Reports, you know, knocked on my door, I thought, this is incredible. This is an organization unlike any other. It's sort of one of the most iconic social enterprises, right? So most nonprofits, you raise your money from donors and philanthropies or some members, but we earn all our revenue, most of our revenue, 90% of our revenue from our members and from products that we create and things that we do of value for consumers. So you're running a business with a social mission. I found really interesting to be able to come and think about that as opposed to a more traditional nonprofit. So it continues to be the most iconic social enterprise in our culture, in our pop culture, but the marketplace has changed dramatically. As we talked about earlier, it doesn't look the way it looked even 15, 20 years ago. It's more diverse. E-commerce has upended so many things we do. The thing that we're known for is rating products. We're not the only game in town. We are the only one that does it from a social mission. We're not a private sector publishing company, right? So we're independent. We don't take any advertising. We never have. People don't know that We've never been supported by an ad. We are all social mission. There's a lot of startup energy and startup glitter, but we have an ecosystem of organizations that have been around for a long time that continually need to be renewed, just like we do, right? We need to renew ourselves. Organizations need that as well. You need to be renewed. And you're right. If you've been around a long time, you get complacent. Just like you get complacent about the things you do in your daily life, right? And it's like, well, I always do it that way. Organizations are exactly the same. So how do you, the notion of going to an organization and building on their tremendous success and reputation, but creating new relevance and a new sense of urgency for what we have to do, I couldn't think of a better time and place to be pursuing that. And your mentioning of innovation, you're right. Imagine an organization that prides itself in its expertise and being an expert at something. And so sometimes there is a fear of innovation, right? Oh, if we do it differently, what will that result in? And sometimes, you know, you hold on a little too tightly to the way things have been done in the past. And you have to learn to loosen that grip because very often, you know, we talk about something in the business world called an innovator's dilemma, where you have a very successful organization that's always done something one way. And there are elements of that organization that are still working really well and that people really appreciate. Like, you know, we have 6 million members and half of those members love our magazine and still want the print magazine. But we also know that there is an enormous number of members that want to be on digital. And so how do you continue to serve that and create space for innovation and growth in the digital marketplace? That's the creative tension that I think I was drawn to.
How do you do that? Because I mean, that's a great example of maybe the members have been around for a long time and they just know the organization the way it's been for a long time. And the magazine is like the perfect thing because I miss actual magazines. I was talking to someone and I'm like, you know, every 6 months or so, I actually go to the grocery store and I grab a magazine that I can like touch and feel and read and just kind of like get that nostalgia. Like, which is so funny to say that a magazine is nostalgic. So how do you discern what is a good change for your members that will potentially divide perhaps their preference? So how do you decide what's best for the organization while still considering your members?
you've put your finger on what it means, you know, to manage a complex organization. That is the constant, you know, you try to come up with metrics. You keep your finger on the pulse of what is it that consumers want, right? You can't get too inside, like, what do I need to do? Wait a minute. Who's your audience? What do they need? What are the dangers and the harms? And what's opaque about the marketplace now that they need help with? And so then you start to think about the kinds of things that e-commerce and the digital space and privacy and control of your data and how do I help do that? And you think of new products like a privacy planner where you start to get smarter about how you secure your devices, right? That's new. That's new for many. And you realize that so much of the burden in the digital marketplace is left to the consumer. And the reason that's the case, and this was another reason why I came to CR with the kind of determination that I did, is that we have these 86 plus years of incredible successes, and we were able to generate consumer protections and consumer rights. I mean, your listeners probably don't know, like, we fought to get seatbelts in cars, in every car. We fought to make sure that the rear view camera is in every car, and that it's not just a luxury add-on, so that, you know, you have safety for your kids. But a lot of people don't realize is a lot of those laws and standards and guidelines that helped us in the, you know, brick and mortar world don't apply to the digital space. And so we're in a consumer rights free fall. And that's where we have to run hard to secure and protect and really establish digital rights for consumers.
For sure. You wrote a book. Tell me about it.
Well, as you can see, I've been thinking about these things for a long time.
Yes.
And I thought, I need to sit down and think about telling the story to more people and growing our movement, demonstrating its relevance, and also highlighting the incredible work that happens at CR and the people that do it, how we do it, the integrity of that work, the fact that we can't be bought or sold, right? We don't take ads. We buy all the products that we test. We're supported by our members. You know, we test over 9,000 products a year, and we're on the front lines, you know, fighting for the kinds of rules because, as I said, there aren't any standards in the digital marketplace. And what I mean by that is all those connected products that we love that we bring into our homes are collecting all that data. Where does that data go? Who owns that data? How is it being repurposed and used? And more importantly, we're also in the financial space. Everybody's using peer-to-peer apps. What a lot of folks don't recognize is that we don't have regulations that really secure. If you like accidentally send the money to the wrong person, there's no guarantee you're going to get it back. And so we have to start establishing the rules of the road for a marketplace that's been allowed to explode and the power of consumers has diminished in that place. So that's a lot of what we think about and worry about as we think about consumer rights in this day and age.
And one thing that I loved about your book is that it comes with like action things to do.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. Every chapter, you're absolutely right.
Super fun.
Yeah. Here I'm at 40,000 feet talking about these rules and the way you want to protect. But what's most important is you're right. At the end of every chapter, it's like you're living in the here and now. What do I do now, Marta, about my privacy? Oh, you have a security planner. I could get that for free on the website. Okay, that's great. I'm going to do that. Oh, you have something called permission slip where I can stop tracking. I could do that. Or how do I know how to smell a fake review versus one that I could trust? What about student loans? How can I pick one that isn't going to put me in a whirlpool of debt? Also, my credit score, your loan, your car loan, they're going to ask you for your credit score. What do you need to know about how that credit score might not be accurate? And then what do you need to know about how to fix it? So all these things that you think about in your daily life and that structure, your ability to meet your aspirations, buying that house, getting that car loan, putting your kid in a safe car seat because it's been tested. Those are the kinds of actionable things, creating that awareness of the problems, but also giving you actionable things you can do about them.
Yeah, there's so many. Like reporting deceptive websites. How do you do that? I mean, when I was going through it, I'm like, wait, there's so, like, it's a whole course, like college course you wrote.
You're right. I call it a playbook. It's a playbook for consumer power.
One that made me think a lot is the cars that we're still using male dummies to test car safety, which women's bodies are smaller. You know, it's just like a whole thing.
That's right. And I'm glad you raise it because we know we have data that shows that women are much more severely impacted by car crashes. And that is precisely the point you raise, is that can you believe that we still use crash dummies that are anatomically male when we know that our biologies, our frame is different? So we are pushing forward on that too. You know, that's a way in which the marketplace is biased. We see that in that world, we see it in algorithms, you know, and what we learned about how you're, you know, people think, we'll stay on cars for a minute, how you probably think your car insurance, the premium you pay is based on how good a driver you are, that you didn't get that fender bender, that, you know, you didn't get that speeding ticket, so your premium's going to go down. Well, what we found out when we sort of reverse engineered the algorithm that determines your premium is that it's more based on other factors that have nothing to do with your driving record, your education level, where you live, and therefore your zip code. And if that zip code is a Black neighborhood or Latino neighborhood or white neighborhood, and guess which neighborhoods pay more and higher premiums?
The Black and brown.
You bet. Black and brown. So that's discrimination. That's not a fair marketplace.
For sure. And all of these things are not out there for people to know and understand. So I was really happy to see that not only are we reading a book that talks about buyer awareness, but also it comes with like action items. And I love those kinds of books that, you know, you can write on and then like go to a website. And for my ADHD, it's like super fun because I get into fun rabbit holes. Where can we find it?
You can find it everywhere, but I would love it if your listeners go to buyeraware.cr.org and you could look at some summaries of the chapters, see how you like it. And you could also, not only that, but you could also sign up to be a part of some of the change making that we're doing. If you're really outraged by this driving thing we just talked about on anatomical crash dummies, get involved. You know, depends on what your passion is. I have seen the difference it makes. It's one thing if I go and testify to Congress and say, this needs to be changed. When I show up with people who have been harmed by a piece of furniture that has tipped over and has killed hundreds of infants and babies, that makes change happen. When they band together and form an organization to create change, that is the sweet spot. And then we start to see the change and we see what the force of consumer voices can do. So buyeraware.cr.org. You could also buy the book, but you can also figure out how to get involved, how to engage, how to learn more about your privacy, about clean water. We've been engaging citizens all around the country to do their own testing. And we made water testing kits available in communities, 150 communities across the country. And disappointingly, yes, they found a lot of PFAS chemicals, which is like the latest harmful chemical in the environment right now that is traceable in our water and our tap water. So we have to engage you in a different way and be part of the movement that I know can make change happen.
For sure. And I love that invitation because, you know, the conversation now, it's like Latinos have $1 trillion of buying power. And I think your invite is, yes, you can buy with your dollars, but also with your actions. Get involved into before even you get to purchase the thing. Is that safe for you? Is that made for you? It's really powerful.
I think that's right. And one of the quotes I have in the book from FDR, which I really love, is democratic freedoms are no half and half affair. If you are given equal opportunity at the polling place, you have to be guaranteed equal opportunity in the marketplace. And look at your opportunities. You vote maybe 2, 3, 4 times a year. You're in the marketplace every single day, making choices that shape our marketplace. The book is really about raising our awareness about some of those choices and understanding that they don't have to be this way. We can make systemic change happen too. Individual choices can ladder up to bigger changes that we have to see so that our communities can thrive.
Martha, what's next for you?
What's next for me in the new year? We have a lot of exciting things happening at CR, and we're now created in the digital lab that we have has now been so successful. We're looking at products, connected products, and how safe they are and how private they are. And so now we've stood up an innovation lab for new products and services that we want to be offering digital. We're also going to be rating fintech products, financial products that everyone's running to. We're doing so much more of our our financial banking and exchange online. So stay tuned for some of those ratings and reviews so that you can have a little bit more trust when you're trying to manage your money online. I think that's a growing area that a lot of consumers want a little bit more help with and transparency on. And then, you know, the big fights, keeping those big tech companies accountable. That is something that keeps me up at night when we see so much monopoly power and so few companies. That's not good for consumers. We need competition, and we can use our choice and our voice to make that happen.
For sure. So tell us where we can find you, all the places and spaces. If people want to connect with you or with Consumer Reports, what are all the sites, the social medias, et cetera?
Yes, you can connect with me on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn. We have our CR.org is our website. Constantly, so many articles that are available to you and tools like the permission slip you can download from the Apple app site. That'll help you on tracking and getting and closing the doors on data trackers that you don't want to have in your space. And we give you information. And the security planner, go to the website to find the security planner. It's also available in Espanol. I know I spend a lot of my time with my elders trying to explain to them, no, that's an ad. That's advertising. Don't click that. You know, so if you want to do a crash course, we have that available too.
I love that.
And then obviously everything around the book and the actions, buyeraware.cr.org.
Awesome. Last two questions. Three. Do you have a remedio? What's your remedy?
My remedio is something I inherited. You know, we are, you try to escape, but you can't. When I was growing up, everybody, my grandmother, my mom always talked about manzanilla, manzanilla, manzanilla. When I finally grew up and realized what manzanilla is, it's chamomile tea. Chamomile tea has all these incredible powers. I still, you know, if I have a stomachache, if I can't sleep, if I have, if I'm stressed out, you reach for manzanilla, that chamomile tea. And that has been, it's my happy place, my safe space. I sit down with a good book, a blanket, and a cup of manzanilla.
Oh, I love that. Manzanilla, yeah, it's very nostalgic. My grandma used to give me manzanilla all the time for a stomachache. And one time I was talking to a client and she was drinking tea while we were on a call. And then she started getting like super like low energy. And I'm like, what are you drinking? And she's like, lavender and manzanilla tea. And I'm like, or chamomile tea. And I'm like, that's why you're sleepy. Because you literally just drank yourself to sleep.
That's right.
So yeah, manzanilla is awesome. What's your quote or mantra that you live by today?
No hay mal que por bien no venga. Another thing my mom and grandma said a lot, and it was an inspiration to me because essentially it says there's a silver lining in all the challenges that you face. Your journey is finding it and learning from it and also pivoting or taking advantage and seeing what that silver lining is. And that's my mantra. I am absolutely a hopeless optimistic, and I think that mantra has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, I like that one too. And what's your productivity tip or trick that you want to share with us?
I'm a list maker. I'm a listicle person. If I don't write it down, and I do it like old school, I don't do the digital list. I do old school. I have a tiny little tablet, and that's my old school way. I just write it down. And the act, the physical act of writing it is also part of the ritual and the discipline.
I agree. I'm a daily list maker too. And I highlight when it's done because I like to see everything highlighted. So I'm with you.
Oh, I like that.
Martha, thank you so much for coming to Café con Pam. This was super fun.
It was a great conversation. Thank you, Pam, for making it happen and for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for coming and for your work and for your book. Everyone, buy the book and definitely peruse around Consumer Reports website because it's really powerful. I think I would say that it's underutilized by the people.
I would love to have your listeners be a part of our Consumer Reports community. I would welcome you with open arms. Bienvenidos.
Vale. Muchas gracias.
Listeners, stay shiny. Sabrosura pa ti que...
All right, listeners, here we are. What do you think? What feelings do you have after this conversation? Consumer Reports is an organization that I knew of for a while. I mean, I've been knowing about Consumer Reports for a minute. And it's frankly an organization that has a lot of information, really helpful. I'm saying this for myself and for all of us that we could absolutely utilize their work more because 87% of consumers look at reviews before making a purchasing decision. So we're probably inside of those 87%. So why not explore and see the reports that consumerreports.org provide from a not bias point of view, which I think is really powerful. Sometimes we need that. And then we're able to build our own opinion about it. So let me know. Let me know your thoughts. Let me know if you get the book. Definitely get the book from Marta. Always, of course, support Latina authors. Of course. So, so, so important. And if you like this episode and you feel called to leave a review or a rating, this is your chance. If you are on Spotify, which it looks like is the second most popular platform for Café con Pam listeners, then you can leave a rating. So as long as you have listened to a couple of episodes, you can leave your stars, and we do appreciate and love 5 stars because it supports. And if you are on Apple Podcast, then you are able to leave a rating, which is 5 stars, and also a review, which means that you have the opportunity to drop some text. And I so appreciate the reviews. Every morning is part of my morning routine, is to see if we've received a new review or a rating. And it makes my day when you have left me some words. And I so appreciate you taking the time. And if you feel stuck in some way, you're like, well, I want to leave a review, but I don't know where to start. Well, the question that you can ask yourself is, what do you love about the show? What were you expecting perhaps before you listened to it, and what happened afterwards? And if you were talking to your best friend or someone that you want to share this to or with, then how would you describe the show to that person? And these are some options to get you started, because I know sometimes when it comes to writing, we get that blank canvas and we're like, ooh, what is even the first word, especially for recovering procrastinators like yours truly. If you would like to stay connected, I would love to. If this is your first time here, thank you so much for tuning in. If someone recommended the show to you, this is your chance to hit that subscribe button, because by doing so, it allows you to then get automatic notifications when we drop a new episode every Sunday, and you don't have to remember. So you free up your brain from another decision to have to make or another task to have to remember. And let's stay connected. I would love to hang out in this virtual world that we live in. Social media is the easiest, at Café con Pam Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. You can also check out our Discord server. It's a really fun place. We have conversations recently a lot more about pop culture and what's been happening. Because frankly, coming from the places where we all come from, I feel like pop culture and talking about the mundane is a coping mechanism to kind of like let us forget about the realities that we are currently living. So it's quite fun. We also talk about TV shows that we've been watching, and we talk further about the episodes. It's super fun. And of course, if you are a part of any one of my clients, if you're a power sister, we of course have channels in there where we talk even more, and we co-work actually. But those are paid channels only. So speaking of paid, if you want to support my work, I have a program, powersisters.club. This is my accountability program, because as a recovering procrastinator, I created the program I needed. Here we are, a dozen or more power sisters later. I think my process has been proven to work. And so I invite you now. Doors are open if you want to join us. powersisters.club. And listeners, thank you so, so much for being here, for listening to me week after week. I don't take it for granted. And I'm going to tease it up a little bit. This is episode 292, but episode 300 is coming. We've been planning it for a few months, because people that you love are going to be in this show, in this episode. And it's 90% sure now that this episode is going to be live. So stay tuned for the invitation. Make sure that you subscribe to my newsletter, to the Clever Cleaver, if you're not in there, so I can let you know, so you're the first to know when we decide how we're going to do this live episode, because 90%, 80% of the folks coming have said yes to making it live. So teasing it out, not sharing too much until I can, because it's going to be so fun and I can't wait. And it's going to be in the essence of Café con Pam, it's going to be a very Café con Pam episode. We're going to have cafecito. It's going to be my friends that you love. And we're going to catch up, because it's been a minute. And I'll leave it at that. Y bueno, if this is your first time and you're like, I don't know what you're talking about, just subscribe. Come back another week. And thank you so, so much for being here today. Y como siempre, stay shining.